Live from the Palatial Pride 48 studios, it's time once again for Dubious Intent to broadcast out to everyone on the internet and everywhere else, hopefully, that's listening anyway. My name is Adam and I am your host, and I am joined tonight by another wonderful co-host. I've just had a plethora of wonderful co-hosts on the show, and once again tonight, another wonderful co-host by Christina of former Greetings from Nowhere, Christina. Hello, Christina.
Hello. Hello, Adam. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. It's been a wild and crazy couple of months, but I'm doing all right.
Well, I follow you on everywhere, on Facebook and everywhere else, and I have seen a few posts on, I don't know exactly what's going on, but I have seen a few posts on Facebook about randomness that's been going on in your world. So yeah.
Well, you said you were game.
I am. So we can, you know, if you want to start with it, we can just, cause I've got boring crap to talk about tonight. So we can just kick it off with your craziness that you were telling me about. So go ahead.
Okay. You sure? Okay. Let me tell you, I am literally going to recite this as it happened. No exaggeration or storytelling effects necessary, because only in my family could you get this level of crazy.
I don't know. I may be able to beat. I mean, I'm going to listen.
You might.
I might be able to beat you. So go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So my nephew, who a lot of you guys know, I was helping him in New Mexico and everything. He just sort of appeared back in California right at the beginning of July.
Now, is this the one I'm only vaguely familiar with your family because, you know, I mean, you and I are friends, but I don't know your family tree or anything. But it seems to me that you were helping a nephew and wife move somewhere with a child and raising money.
Yeah. So everyone will remember from like, I think it was like April when my nephew had moved to New Mexico to be closer to his girlfriend and his son. Okay. And they had gotten an apartment in the whole nine yards, and they had moved there because her family was there. Now my family had let them live with my parents had let her live with them while she was pregnant because her family kind of kicked her out. And for 2 years, you know, they just sort of took care of her and the whole nine yards. And then she decided she wanted to go to New Mexico to be closer to her family. So Adrian, my nephew, wanted to go with them because he didn't want to abandon his girlfriend and his son. He wanted to be able to support them. And so we bought him a train ticket to go out to New Mexico. And this was last summer. And so they were doing fine for a little while. And then he had some trouble getting work, and so they had to give up their apartment and they moved in with her family. But her family had, for some weird reason, had just decided they don't like him. I know now why they didn't like him. We'll get to that. But they had decided they didn't like him and they weren't going to help him. And because she was standing by his side, they weren't helping her either. And basically they threw them out in the streets in this little town in New Mexico. And I was having like panic attacks because you get these phone calls saying, you know, you need to help your nephew and he's two states away and you have no one who's nearby who you can say, hey, can you go pick my nephew up? Can you help me out? And so we're scrambling to try to figure out how to help them in the whole nine yards. And then that resulted in the GoFundMe, which resulted in me being able to get them back into an apartment, get their rent paid up all the way through the end of June so that they had months, kind of a few months of a buffer so that he could look for work and do all this stuff. Okay.
Yeah. I remember you saying stuff like you couldn't understand like why they were being so,
right.
You didn't use the word mean, but I mean, so difficult, why they hated him so much, like all that. I remember all of that. Yeah.
Well, turns out, and we've only found this out now, but turns out he developed quite the nasty drug addiction while he was in New Mexico, because when there's nothing else to do and you're hanging out in a neighborhood full of meth heads, you become a meth head. Apparently, like that's how it worked. I'm being very sort of flippant, but this is what occurred. He and his girlfriend and the baby like scrounged up enough money to get one-way Greyhound bus tickets in at the beginning of July after the rent that I had paid on their apartment. Basically, when that ran out and he still was doing nothing because he was a laying about drug addict, they said, okay, we're just going to move out and go home, is how they put it. So they hopped a bus, came back, showed up in California. They called my sister to say, hey, we're back. Come get us at the bus station. And so my sister made sure that girlfriend Angelique and baby were safely ensconced with Angelique's mom, who lives in the area. And then she took Adrian home with her. It did not take long for Adrian to completely destroy my sister's house in his addiction. And my sister has just recently had a brand new baby of her own. So she was like, you can't be here if you're going to be on drugs, not near my brand new, not even 3-month-old baby. And so he got kicked out of that house. He terrorized my parents so badly with his addiction that my parents not only kicked him out, they filed a restraining order against him. So then it was trying to get him into some sort of care. So my sister called me saying, please, can you help us get him into some sort of rehab or sober living or something? I found a treatment center out near where she lives. It's about a 20-minute drive from where she lives. It's a live-in treatment center. It was pretty expensive. It was about $1,000 a month, which I don't really have an extra $1,000 a month to spend for somebody else. Right. But Bob and I kind of reworked our budget and kind of scraped it together so that we could afford to do this, where we were going to pay $1,000 a month for him to live in this sober living treatment center. Right.
Wow. So his mom, they just couldn't afford it at all, or they just had no interest?
No, none of them make the kind of money to be able to do that. They literally are barely getting by. My parents, one, didn't make that kind of money, and two, were like, we wash our hands of it. My sister wants to, and she was like, I will find a way to pay you back. But she, of course, doesn't make much. Her fiance, you know, works two jobs so that they can make rent, and she literally was still on maternity leave and her disability had run out. So she wasn't bringing any money in at all at the time. They were just hanging on until she got released from maternity leave and could go back to work. So my husband and I took it on that, yes, we will do this. We figured it out. We got him admitted. There was a waiting list. So he kept calling in every day to stay on the waiting list. Finally, they said, okay, you get to move in on Saturday. This is middle of July. So Saturday, my sister takes him there, drops him off, checks him in, the whole nine yards. And this is like on, gosh, I want to say, well, okay, this is before J.A. Martin's wedding. So that would be Saturday, July 8th is when she drops him off. Okay. He lasts
Was he like a willing, I mean, did he want to do this, or were you guys kind of?
It would be a lot easier if we could like force admit him. But the thing is he's an adult. So you can't force an adult to do this. They have to volunteer. So we had to get him. We basically had to talk to him about his options. And he said, I would like to get clean. I would like to go to rehab. So we said, okay, we can afford to do this until we can pay for like an inpatient rehab. You'll do this sober living thing. So, because inpatient rehab is way more expensive. So on July 8th, she checked him into the sober living. He lasted there about 2 hours. And then he walked out. He gave my sister this whole story about how guys were smoking drugs in the bathroom and he couldn't get clean if he was in a place where it was dirty. And my sister was just like, okay. And she picked him up and she called me and she said, can he stay with you while he goes to a treatment in San Jose? Because literally the treatment center we put him in out by where she lives was the only one in the county. She lives in this tiny little podunk county. We put him in the only one, right? So I got permission from my landlord so that he could move out here and move into my house. He moved in on Tuesday, July 11th. And the day of J.M. Martin's wedding, that following Saturday, the 15th. So this is like 5 days later. We went to the wedding during the day. We got home from the wedding in the evening. Mean Keen, the podcast listener, Mean Keen, who lives in San Diego, showed up at my house to spend the night Saturday night because he was traveling north and needed a couch to crash on. And I offered my couch to him. So Saturday, the 15th, we get home from Jay and Martin's wedding. Mean Keen shows up and everything's fine, only for me to realize my house has been robbed. Not any big stuff. TV's not gone. The PlayStation's not gone. What's disappeared is all the little things around my house that are worth money. My Beats wireless limited edition headphones, Bob's wedding ring, our Amazon Fire tablet, Literally anything that was small and worth money was pocketed and removed from my house. I found that drawers in my house had been gone through. The closets in my house had been gone through. All of this while we were gone. So I went out to go confront my nephew in the middle of the night when we realized all of this. And I found my nephew locked in a room about to do drugs with two of my batshit crazy neighbors, crackhead friends.
Wow.
And lost my mind, because up until that point, he kept saying, nobody trusts me. I'm staying clean, but nobody believes me. Everybody assumes I'm lying. I just want people to give me a chance. So we were like, fine, we'll give you a chance. We'll trust you. And this is what happened. He had been telling me all week, because he was barely home, oh, I met this guy down the street and he works on cars out of his garage and he's teaching me how to work on cars. So I'm spending my time there so that I'm not tempted to hang out with drug people. Okay, great. When I headed out of my house that night to go confront him about the stuff missing, I was heading towards the house that he had pointed out to me of the guy who apparently worked on cars in his garage. And as I'm walking towards this place, I realized the garage has no garage door and the lights are off. So there's nobody hanging out in that garage where he told me he was going to be.
What I always want to know is, like, so how do people who do drugs find, like, it's amazing to me, and maybe this is a stupid thing to latch on to, but, like, first of all, how do you find drugs in the first place? And then how did he, within, like, a day or two of being in your condo, find the other people in your neighborhood that also do drugs? I don't know.
Let me say, I have the same thought you had. And then in talking to a friend of mine, a former addict who was really, really, really badly into it, she was, and who is now clean and has been for many, 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 many years. She's been a great source of kind of help through this whole thing. She told me, she goes, there are drugs in every single neighborhood, regardless of how nice it is, how clean it looks, how upstanding it is, and how lovely the people who live in it are. It also doesn't matter if there's poor people in that neighborhood, people of color, all white people, high-end people. She goes, it doesn't matter. You can find drugs in any neighborhood in this country. It does not matter the social standing, the makeup of the neighborhood, nothing. She goes, if you want to find drugs, you can find them anywhere. She goes, and if you are someone who is hooked on drugs, you know exactly the type of people to look for. You can spot your own from a mile away, and you can spot which house will be carrying.
I guess so. Anybody I've ever known who's like smoked pot or done anything like that, and I'm like, where do you even find this? But I guess you could kind of, because I'm just wondering, I can just see them like knocking door to door. Excuse me, you know, like you go to your neighbors to borrow some sugar or something, you know, right. But they're like, I don't know, do you happen to have any meth lying around? I'm fresh out. And
that's the crazy thing, is I was that way. I was like, but how do you know who, like, you can't just randomly walk around to everybody like, do you smoke meth? Can you get me some? She's like, no, no, you don't have to. You can spot who's on your team. She goes, you can tell. She goes, it is not difficult when you know what to look for. And she goes, you, and she was saying, meaning me, she goes, have you ever in your life needed to find drugs? Have you ever had an addiction to drugs? And I was like, no. And she was like, that's why you don't know what to look for. She goes, now, do you know who to find, who in your neighborhood would be the best, like, person to go to the movies with for all of those historical, you know, period piece romantic movies you love to go to? And I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly the people, the ladies in my neighborhood who would totally be part of like the romance writers book club. She goes, okay, so you can spot your people. She goes, we can spot our people too. And she goes, we know right away just from observing the neighborhood where the best place to score is.
So Toppy in the chat room says he knows where to find all his cookie dough peep.
Right.
And you know, there are gay folks out there, you know, who, you know, especially when cruising was more of a thing than it is now. I mean, now if you want to have sex, you just go on an app and, you know, you just say, hey, and then, you know, whatever.
Wasn't socially okay. And you had to kind of do it on the down low when you were out in public.
Yeah. And so you would know exactly how to make eyes with someone. Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe they have some kind of, you know, they just look at each other and they know, they're like, yeah, that's the meth look.
They have a hanky code. Yeah. I'm serious. The way my friend said it to me, it sounded very much to me like that. Like way back when things were on the down low, and apparently drug culture is very much like that. So I scared poor Mean Keen, who was sleeping on my couch, because I lost my shit. I'm sorry for cursing on your show, but I lost it. And here's the thing. You guys know me as a loud person. Like, I'm loud and I'm boisterous and I'm mouthy. In real life, I'm a really quiet person. I live quietly. My neighbors know me as a very nice, quiet lady who, if there's a local stray cat who needs help, they know to knock on my door. The kids all know that, you know, we have the three cats and they can come by and they can ask questions about cats and the nice lady will answer the questions. Like, I'm known in my neighborhood as just being that nice, quiet white lady, right? Except this night, I literally went off at full volume in the middle, like literally total just white trash vocal beatdown of my nephew in the middle of the alleyway to where I woke up neighbors. I scared Mean Keen awake on my couch. I am still forever embarrassed by that. Like, I am mortified that he saw this. He was there for this to happen. The one thing I wish is that his evening here could have been not so white trashy dramatic.
He's like, whoa, picked a wrong night to go couch surfing on my way to wherever.
Let me tell you, he is a darling human being. He was really, really lovely, and I enjoyed meeting him so much. And I felt terrible that he had to witness basically me losing my shit. And but so my nephew got kicked out of my house that he didn't even make it 5 days. He got kicked out. And because we had told him, you stay clean. You're here to get clean, so you have to stay clean. That's the rule here. Because he had nowhere else to go, my nephew decided by choice that he was going to squat in my garage and live in my garage. My garage is shared space. It is shared with my neighbor. So it's considered public space. So you can park your car there, but you can't legally. There's nothing else you can do. If someone's sleeping in there, there's nothing you can do unless both landlords or both owners of both units decide to call the authorities, right? I didn't want to call the cops on my nephew. I wanted him to go to rehab, but he literally slept in my garage before I finally talked him into going to another sober living house that I found in San Jose. He lasted 10 days at that sober living house, 10 days. And he checked himself out. Now, meanwhile, I'm not sleeping well. I've been going through massive amounts of stress. My hair started falling out. Like, this is so sad. This is not a really super sad story, but it's kind of like a weird side note. Is literally, I'm in therapy now. So, like, to deal with anxiety, this is how much this whole thing has been insane. It's been just insane. He lasted 10 days in the sober living, checked himself out, came back, is basically living around my neighborhood again. That's why all these vague Facebook posts are about, is about me trying to get him into rehab, him saying he will do it, and then him just checking himself out and disappearing and coming back. Like, I'm supposed to just take him into my house and start feeding him again. And I have told him, until you are clean, you are not allowed to be in my home. You just aren't. You're just not. And I'm keep being told by everybody I know who has an addiction that this is how he has to hit rock bottom and go and want to be cleaned up. I can't force him to do it. He has to make the choice on his own. But the more I'm taking care of him, the more I'm enabling him to just keep living the way he's living. There is an added twist. And this is where the story gets super bizarre, right? Right now, it's just been sad. This is where it gets really bizarre. On the day that we checked him in to the sober living house by my sister, so this is back in July, my uncle Robert passed away. We got the phone call at about 11 o'clock in the morning that he had passed away. And so we had a family tragedy on top of it, because my uncle Robert was the oldest of the four kids that my grandma had. It was my dad's big brother. My dad is still really, really kind of affected by the passing of his brother because they were only 3 years apart. So it's kind of hit my dad super bad. And, my grandmother is still alive. So we were notified, because we lived nearby in a neighboring city. We had to notify my grandmother that her oldest son had passed away. It was a really crazy day. We found out afterwards that my Uncle Robert had set up his 401k to be divided amongst the four youngest members of the family, which are my nephew, Adrian. No. My cousin Gabby, her brother Jacob, and my cousin Sylvia. Those were the kids. We call them the kids now, even though they're all in their early 20s. Okay. Because those are the kids. So there's an inheritance coming, and it's not like, you know, six figures, but it's five per person. So it's a lot of money. You know, it's at minimum, it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $45,000 per kid. And it's probably going to be more. We just don't know what the total in his 401k was, but we know it was significant. So even after taxes, they're all going to get a nice chunk of money as an inheritance. I'm trying to get my nephew into rehab before his inheritance comes in, because if it comes in and he's not on the way to getting clean, all of that is going to get blown away with drugs.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, that's enough money that he can kill himself with that inheritance. He can kill himself in an OD so fast with that kind of money to pay for drugs. And terrible people will take advantage of him to get their hands on that money, right? So I talked my nephew into opening a bank account, which I put money in to keep it open, so that he could receive his money direct deposit rather than trying to wait around when he had no address for a check and you know, all that stuff. So we opened a bank account for him. He asked me to be on the bank account as a way to help him maintain his finances. And I was kind of like, I don't know if you really want that. He was like, Auntie, I need you to help me manage this because I've never had a lot of money like this before. And I need someone to kind of help me out. He goes, because I want to get a car and I want to go to rehab. And I said, okay.
So he's aware he's getting this money.
Oh, yeah, he knows. He had to sign up. He had to sign all the paperwork and everything. I helped him fill out the paperwork for it. So the thing is he now has this bank account sitting, and I am a co-owner of the account, not by my request, by his. Okay. So I have full access to this account. Nobody knows that except my sister. Okay. But what the rest of the family does know is that he is staying in San Jose near me, and that I am going to help him manage his money. So it hasn't been paid out yet. None of this money has shown up yet. I'm desperately trying to get him sort of squared away somewhere, and he keeps resisting. And literally on Monday night, he showed up at my house at 11 o'clock at night asking me to give him a ride because he had a new place to stay. That was a roof, an actual roof in a house. You know, it was like a room in a house. So he was like, this way I'm not sleeping outside anymore. Cause he's been just parking himself and crashing like on park benches and stuff in my neighborhood. It's been getting so bad that my neighbors have started complaining to the homeowners association. And my landlord got a notice that I have invited vagrants into the facility and into the neighborhood or into the association. And that if he is found to be hanging around my house, my lease is to be terminated. Right.
Gosh.
So, yeah. So I'm under threat of losing my own place to live if he keeps crashing on, you know, in my neighborhood or in my garage or whatever. So he was like, I need a ride to this house. I've got a room to stay in. I was like, I will drive you. I will drive you. I will take you. I will take you there. At 11:30 at night on Monday night, I dropped him off at what I can only assume is a flop, because it is a house in the middle of downtown San Jose that has no electricity. The people who live there get around using flashlights. I have never known someone to own a house and not be able to turn the lights on. So I'm sitting there going, this is their house. And he goes, yeah, they live here and there's no electricity. No, they don't have the time to turn it on yet. So I'm thinking, these people are squatting in an abandoned house. What the hell are you doing? And I'm like, I don't really like this idea. Like, this doesn't look safe. And he was like, look, it's a roof. And I was like, well, you got me there, right?
Yeah.
So I drop him off. Today, I keep thinking of
like all of those, like I'm a big fan of procedural dramas. So, you know,
seriously. This is totally like a Law and Order or Criminal Minds or something like that. And I love those shows. Yeah.
I hear the doom doom or whatever, you know, that show. And then
here's the craziest thing, though. The kids who are all getting these inheritance payouts, they have been having, Adrian's been separated from it because he's been here with me and his mother doesn't hassle him. But the other kids have been getting harassed by their parents, my uncle's siblings, because my cousin Gina, who is Gabby and Jacob's mom, and my Aunt Roberta, who is Sylvia's mom, are mad that their kids are getting something from Bobby's will and not them. And they feel like they should be getting something, because you know how money, you know, when there's a death and money's involved, people get ugly, right? So these kids have been dealing with, you know, parents who are like, well, you know, you can pay for everything now and you can do this now. Most of these kids live on their own, which means they pay their own thing anyway. They're just dealing with their parents being snipey and horrible to them because they're getting money and they aren't, right? Last night, I got a phone call from my parents. My mother spent 2 hours on the phone trying to convince me that it was morally right to commit grand larceny, and that when Adrian's money enters into his bank account, that I needed to go in there, pull all of it out of the bank account, close the account, and give the money to them.
Because they don't want him to use it for drugs, or because they want the money?
At first, she tried to say, well, Bobby wouldn't want him to use the money this way. He's going to use it irresponsibly. And I said, I agree with you. That is a worry of my own. However, legally, we can't do anything because he is an adult. He is deemed mentally competent. And that account is in his name, which means legally, that's his money. That money was left to him in the will. It is his money. No one else has the right to take that money. There is nothing we can do short of stealing from him. And I said, and I am not stealing from my nephew. My mother then switched to, well, I raised him for 18 years and he owes us for stealing from us and for everything we're out. They're not talking about wanting to manage his money. They want to take his money and still leave him out on the street with nothing. Now, if they had come to me saying, we think we would be better equipped to help him manage his money, we want to move him back into our house and we will help him take care of it, then I would say, I will present your idea to Adrian. That wasn't what they said. What they said was, Chrissy, we want you to go in there, empty his bank account and give it to us because he'll just do drugs. With no mention of wanting to help Adrian in any, they basically talked only about the money. So no, they just want the money. They don't want to actually help him. They just feel like they should have it because they don't approve of how he lives his life. Now, I don't approve of how he's going to use that money most likely either, but I have resigned myself to realizing there is literally nothing that we can do about this. There's nothing we can do. We were not left that money in the will. We are not his guardians. He is an adult. But I'm not kidding you. My parents, who are usually, well, my father is usually a very level-headed person, they are going nuts. And they try to argue that morally, it is okay to steal from a homeless person.
Yeah, well, I mean...
What's going on?
I don't agree with them. I will say it's tragic that he had to get the money at the stage of his life that he, you know, at this time is not the best time because it's likely that he will use it for, you know.
Yes. I'm still hoping that I will be able to talk him into checking into a rehab when the money comes in. I'm hoping that if he doesn't feel like he's mooching off family to pay for it when he can pay for it himself, I'm hoping that I can maybe talk him into committing himself to an inpatient rehab. Because if he does that, it's 30 days inside. He can't voluntarily check himself out till it's done. And it gives him a shot. And then from there, he can transition into a new sober living house so that he can get himself back on his footing. But I can't do that right now because if I talk him into going into rehab right this minute, I have to somehow find a way to pony up $15,000 just all at once. And I don't have $15,000. So I can't talk him into going to rehab until I can literally put him in it the next day. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the window of when an addict says, yes, I will do this, and when they'll change their mind is so small that you have to be able to jump on it as soon as they say, yes, I'm willing to do this. And no rehab is going to let them walk through the door unless I can pony up the monthly fee right up front.
Is it $15,000 a month?
It's the cheapest one in this area that I could find was it's actually $18,000. It's $18,000 for 30 days. They range from $18,000 to $36,000.
God, what do they do? I mean, are these like gold plated?
They're used to dealing with people who have insurance, who have private insurance. So they bill the insurance company. You know, if someone needs to get addiction care, it's usually covered by their Blue Cross, you know. Oh, so,
yeah, and companies cover that a lot of times too when you have a corporate job. You're going to have insurance, but companies usually will kick in extra they always say, we have addiction coverage and we have all the, yeah. So,
but when you're a homeless young man on Medi-Cal, the only thing they'll tell you is, go to the outpatient at Valley Medical. which, by the way, is the easiest place to buy methamphetamines in the city. It's like the biggest drug trafficking place in the city. But yeah, it's not good if you don't have means. And so, but the craziest part of the story, the whole, like literally the surreal part of the story was the phone call with my parent. Like after all of this, like you're dealing with an addict, you know, you're going to be dealing with insanity and lies and theft. And like, that's just dealing with someone who has a drug addiction. That's what you go through. But then to then have to deal with my parents call me and be like, if you have access, I'm not kidding you, I had to boldface lie to my parents and tell them that even though I've been asked to help him monitor his funds, I don't have access to the account. I had to lie to them and flat out tell them that my access is very limited and I don't actually have the capabilities to make withdrawals from his account. And that was the only way that my parents got off of asking me to do it. And then they switched tactics to, well, do you know where he's staying? And I'm thinking, you have a restraining order against him. You can't go looking for him. You literally went to the legal route to make sure he can't go near you. So you can't then go looking for, but they literally want to like go find him. And so they were asking me for like directions of where I dropped him off. It was insane. It's insane.
Like, what are they going to do?
They want to find him and talk him into handing the money over to them. And Tommy San Francisco in the chat room is absolutely right. He responded to, sorry, he's not a minor. And that is absolutely right. He is a 20-year-old adult. The inheritance was left to him by name. And so it's not, we cannot do anything. And then Tommy San Francisco also said, sorry, they can't be judge and jury and steal money. And that is also absolutely correct. And even though I do agree with some of the points they made, he's not going to use the money responsibly. He's going to probably smoke it all away in drugs. These are all valid things that, yes, I am worried about too. That does not mean that I can justify committing larceny against my nephew. Like there's just because I can doesn't mean I should, because I have the capability to do that. But that doesn't mean that that is even something I would consider, because that is theft and it is not right. And it's a violation of his rights as an adult. And I would not do that. And the thing is literally people are trying to justify it by, well, they don't approve of how he lives. Look, I don't approve of how he lives, but this is not something you can chase legally, because they're going to tell you no. And the reason why is because it used to be that if you didn't approve of the way someone acted, you could legally commit them to places and you could take their money away and you could do that. And you know who that was used against? Women, gay people. Like the laws change so that people could not be tormented this way just because someone didn't agree with how they live. And my parents are just like, but he's going to use it all for drugs. Yep. And if he does, that's the end of that. Nothing we can do.
It's unfortunate, but maybe he won't. Maybe he'll listen to reason, but I'm no expert, but generally you hear people have to hit rock bottom. And yes. Unfortunately, coming into money right when you're dealing with addiction is not rock bottom yet, because then he has funds. He could, you know, pay for some place to live and afford drugs.
It could be, though, if he actually parties it up, like say he takes some of that, say it's a lot of money. Let's say, for instance, it's like 50 grand. You don't need to go through the whole 50 grand before you can OD and end up in the hospital. You can do that on $5,000 or $10,000. You can do that on even less, depending on what you're buying. So say he goes crazy and parties it up and it causes him to OD and he gets picked up and wakes up from a coma or something in the hospital. Now, this is a very exaggerated scenario. But if that is his rock bottom and it triggers him finally deciding that, yes, I am ready to get clean and get serious about my recovery, then it could end up being a good thing. Now, please understand that I am holding on to the hope that when this money comes in, it triggers him to want to do something to ensure a future, and it triggers him to go to rehab before he risks the whole death by OD thing. But this money could be literally like the start of an even worse lifestyle and addiction, or it could be the trigger that puts him in rock bottom and gets him serious about getting clean. It could go either way. Everybody's rock bottom is different.
Well, I can tell you, so where I'm from, so Arkansas, I mean, there's meth all over. Well, there's meth everywhere, but where I'm from in South Arkansas, it's really bad. It's really, there's nothing to do there except do meth. Mm-hmm. And I swear most people do. And my nephew, He is in jail right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in jail for the past 6 months, I believe.
Okay.
Because I believe it's meth, but it may be meth and other things. But he basically he's never been in a situation where he's been homeless, because he's always had people that would let him stay there, whatever. His grandfather, will give him a job anytime he, messes up or whatever. But he went through a phase where he was just... He literally, and I don't even remember what this was exactly, but he was driving around and he stole something from a construction site, something mm-hmm. to try to sell to buy more drugs.
Oh, yeah.
And he stole several times. He stole stuff from my brother, who's his father. He's stolen from, and that's why he's in jail. I mean, not specifically from my brother, but I mean, his stealing is why he's in jail right now. He was on probation, and then he broke probation or something, and I don't even remember, but he's in jail. And then I have my cousin is married. Her husband is I believe a meth addict as well. And I mean, they're still together, but he looks horrible. I mean, we were at a wedding that they were at, and I don't know. He looks horrible. He looks sick all the time, and he's super thin, and his
teeth will start going bad. He'll have problems with his skin. His hair will start getting really, really thin and straw like. Drugs ravage your body, but I will tell you, meth really ravages the outside as much as it ravages the inside. You can always tell when someone used to do a lot of coke, because they have the really, really heavy instead of having smile lines coming down from their nose, they have it where they always look like they're sniffing a lot, and it's from sniffing up cocaine. So you have really, really deep sniff lines in their face. Just like someone who smiles a lot has smile lines that radiate right there. So you can always tell, like, people from the 80s, like old celebrities now, you can tell which ones did a lot of cocaine in the 80s because of their face. Meth does that to people too. You can see the ravage on their face, but it does because you pick at your skin. So you end up with like open sores, and you end up with scarring, and you end up with all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. It's really terrible. That's the big thing that you can tell if people have, it looks like they have really bad acne, but they're, they're at an age when it's not even acne, but you can just see they look real thin and sick, and their hair looks real thin, and they have all these sores all over their face and bad teeth.
Right. That's exactly right.
Anyway, I don't know, because I'm not around. I'm not down there, but I do. My family has dealt with that. Well, I'm sorry you're going through all of that. That's horrible.
It's really terrible. And it's really sad to see what, not just what my nephew's going through, but to see what money does to people who are in the sphere of somebody. Like, it's sad to see what the passing of someone in a family who leaves money for some but not others can cause huge rifts in the family. Like, my cousins are all fighting with their parents, and it's really ugly. It's just ugly. My sister and I have talked every day, and we talk about, this is fucking crazy. Like, we're just like, oh my God. Like, to the point where my sister actually said to me, aren't you glad mom and dad don't have any money? Because, oh my God, would we fight like this? I was like, no, we would not, because we both would be like, okay, what did mom and dad want done? You know? And we would go with that, because this is the second time we've watched our family like tear each other apart over money from the passing of someone. When my grandfather passed away on my mom's side of the family, we watched his family everyone ripped each other apart fighting over his estate. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. So we have a whole bunch of crazy stuff going on, but the silver lining is I have a fantastic therapist, and I still hold out a small sliver of hope that I can talk my nephew into rehab if and when the money comes in, because I'm hoping he will feel more independent if he can pay for it himself. Yeah. 'Cause he has a real hang up about having to have family pay stuff for stuff for him. Like, it really bothered him that I paid the rent on all the sober living houses and everything. And so he's like, I will pay you back. I will pay you back. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm not expecting it back, but
by
you know,
stealing like, your stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was a great way to pay me back. But you know, drugs do weird things to people and you steal. And I mean, it's just the way it is. I'm more concerned that he doesn't starve to death between now and when the money comes in, because he's just out living out there on the street. And I've tried to talk him into going to a shelter, and he literally told me to my face, I prefer being homeless because then I don't have to deal with other people's bullshit rules. And what can you do when that's what they, when he turned down every other offer, literally, unless we're willing to let him live with us, or my sister's willing to let him move into her house. And both of us have been told, no, he can't be here. Me by my landlord, my sister by her fiance. He was like, no, he cannot be around our new baby when he's on drugs. So
no, that's
his. And his own girlfriend will not let him see his son right now because she has said, you can't see your son until you're clean. It's ugly and it's tragic. And I know I'm sharing family, you know, skeletons and stuff. But if it helps even one person listening to understand that if you have someone in your family who's using drugs and you're enabling them by giving them a place to live and feeding them and letting them just do this, it is not going to help them. I have been talking to, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and all of them. You know, they have support groups for people dealing with people who are addicts. And they all say the same thing. You can't keep enabling him. He has to hit his rock bottom and go through this himself. As much as you want to fix it for him so he doesn't have to, he has to go through this. So.
Well, my ex was an alcoholic. And
kind of the same thing. Addiction is addiction, regardless of what the drug of choice is.
Yeah.
And, if you get far enough into it, it gets ugly. It will always get ugly.
Yeah, and he didn't, he was not, well, I don't know. I mean, he didn't seem to have a problem when we met, but his drinking got worse and worse and worse over the years. And then he was to the point where he would go out to the, when we lived in an apartment, he would go out to the parking garage and get in his car, and he would hide bottles of vodka under his driver's seat. Gosh. And he would drink out there. And then come back in and swear up and down that he wasn't drinking, but he would be like, oh, I'm going to go out to smoke or whatever. Or I've got to get something out of my car. And he'd be drinking vodka. And that, you know, that ended with me having to call the police one night because he was super drunk, you know, terrorizing, not me, luckily, but I mean, just throwing crap around in the apartment. And like, I was like, you're going to destroy the apartment and everything. So that ended with that. And then he went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And that was enough for him that he joined alcohol. He joined AA like the next day. And I mean, we broke up. I mean, I was like, no, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry. I'm like, I've lived with this for a couple of years now. And it's too late. You know,
we all reach a point where we're done. And that's it. Yeah.
And luckily that worked for him. I mean, he didn't, as far as I know, he stayed sober, but and only took that one trip to prison, but it was crazy. So, well,
it's insanity. And of course there's the helplessness of knowing, I mean, I dropped him off in that house in downtown San Jose on Monday. When I got home from work today, he was sitting on the steps of the house of the unit behind me. And I was like, what happened to the house you were staying at that I dropped you off? He's like, oh, I got evicted. So he's back living in my neighborhood. He's living in the unit. He's apparently staying with the neighbor that I used to talk about on GFN, the one I referred to as batshit crazy, who I would the one who lets homeless people sleep in our garage, not just my nephew. She has a habit of allowing homeless people to sleep in our garage before. I have walked into my garage to get in my car in the morning and have found people in sleeping bags sleeping right up next to my car. And so she's apparently invited him to stay at her house. She was also the one who introduced him apparently to the local drug dealer here in the neighborhood. So, but he's got a roof, I guess, but it's literally the place right next door. In fact, the wall to my right now is a shared wall with that unit. He is literally right on the other side of the wall.
Well,
but you know, it is what it is. It is. I mean, what do you do? What do you do? You
go
you
to
can't.
Therapy. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to therapy.
I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah, well, moving on to something that's completely not,
please,
seems so inane now, but do you watch Big Brother? You probably don't.
I don't, but enough people tweet about it. Thank you, Ramble Redhead and Big Fatty, that I'm able to kind of keep up with who's hated.
Well, I don't want to have, I mean, this is not, I don't normally talk about TV shows or do movie reviews or anything like this, but I just had to mention, so I watch Big Brother, Mark and I watch Big Brother, and there's this guy in Big Brother that, his name is Cody, and...
Okay, the name that I keep seeing on Twitter, and he's apparently just a trash human being, but okay.
Well, here's the deal. I mean... He was, I guess he was a Marine or he was in something like that. So he is the angriest, meanest. I mean, his face all the time looks like he literally would pull out a machine gun at any point and just mow down the entire house.
He probably would.
He is constantly angry and has this bad look on his face.
Is he the homophobic, transphobic one? Because I saw something on Twitter about a Big Brother house guest said a bunch of like anti-transphobic or said a bunch of transphobic and homophobic stuff.
I don't know because I didn't hear about that specifically, but
I know who it was. I'm sorry. Okay,
this guy. So I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. But he's antisocial and he. He refuses, like, you go on a game like Big Brother and you know you need to be a social person and you need to, you know, a big part of the game is like being social, but he refuses. He like gets mad at people, takes everything personally. He always has this horrible look on. I mean, if I was in the house, I would be afraid of him. Like the looks that he has on his face. I mean, it looks like he's going to like punch somebody in the nose like all the time. And well, this girl who looks, I swear, Jessica, who looks... like an Ariana Grande, she could win an Ariana Grande lookalike contest.
Okay, so she's cute. She's super cute.
Oh, yeah, she's super cute. I mean, you know, she, okay. A lot of makeup and hair extensions and everything else, but I mean, she's
well,
cute.
Well, I mean, you know, you use every tool you've got, right?
Yeah, right. And so she has ruined her game because they fell in love with the, and so she's been basically mean girl. It's like he's either she was also a mean girl, like he's a mean boy basically, or he rubbed off on her, or I don't know, but they've just been this mean couple.
Okay.
And it's just, and really I had no point other than the reason I don't like him so much is because he reminds me of like all of those redneck, you know, you've got to act a certain way, sullen looking. You can't smile because that's not manly, you know, kind of good old boys that I grew up around, you know, in my hometown. And so that was where I heard some music or something all of a sudden.
No, that was me giving you strawberries.
Oh. And sorry. I was like, what is that? I was like, anyway.
That's me making sticking my tongue out and doing strawberry raspberry fart noises because he sounds like a terrible human being who brings out the worst in everybody he has access to.
Yeah. And so they couldn't and they couldn't get him out this week because he won some contest, which basically gave him immunity for the week. And so they were all gunning for Jessica. And instead of trying to play the game and, you know, kind of bring people over to her side or whatever, she like totally was mean to everyone in the house all week long. And like, and I'm like, if you hadn't have latched onto this guy, and I guarantee you that when they both get out of the house, they're not going to be able to stay together because he's such a horrible person.
Well, here's a thought. And this is just something from a girl's point of view. What if she originally showed interest in him because is he good looking? Like he has a good body and stuff. You said a Marine and he's fit. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what if her original attraction was, oh, he's cute. Maybe we can have some fun. And then she realized, oh, this guy has serious rage issues and I'm trapped in this house with him. So if I try to end it with him now, he literally will hurt me because you've yourself said you'd be afraid to live in the house with him. And so she's like miserable and terrified. So she's venting it out by being horrible to everybody else. And maybe she's hoping she'll get voted out of the house so that she can leave and get far, far away from him and not have to deal with him anymore.
Maybe. But if that's the case, she's a really good actress because she's like crying about having to be away from him and like telling everybody how much she loves him and they're all smooching over in the corner and everything. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
When a woman is is terrified of an abusive partner, she can play it for real. Like, it's, you will think that she adores the ground he walks on, and in her head she's saying, I cannot wait to get away from this person.
Maybe. And I can't,
where he will not be able to hurt me.
I can't.
He could just be a truly terrible person.
Yeah, and I can't say. I mean, he hasn't done anything. I can't say that he's abusive, but and he treats her like, I mean, obviously this is a reality show and you have no idea. They edit this stuff together. But I'm just saying, from what you see on the cameras, he treats her like a princess, but she's the only one in the house that he treats nice. And
for now, she's putting out for him. But what if she said, I don't really think you're a good person and this is over?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Said he's a real ragey kind of person. So maybe he doesn't hurt her now, but she knows that if she tries to end it, that'll change real quick. Like, maybe not having watched the show. I mean, she could just be a horrendous bitch who likes being mean to people. But I'm just saying there is the possibility that she is playing this in the hopes that it'll get her out of that house to get away from him. Like, she's realized she's made a horrid mistake hooking up with this guy, because if she tries to end it, he's going to turn into like psycho.
Well, all I can say is whatever. I don't know, but I mean, now he was voted out maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, and then they had one of those stupid contests where they bring somebody back. And so
people were voted out for a reason. Do not invite the terror back in.
So he made it back in, and she wanted him at that point. She wanted him to come back. So I don't know. She was like so happy when he came back and whatever. But that's the reason I have this visceral, you know, reaction to this guy, because he's so, his face. I mean, literally, you should just, I don't know. I don't know if even a picture would do justice, but you should Google or like watch just a little clip or something and look at the faces he makes.
I'm Googling Cody Big Brother, and I'm going to go to the images.
It's, I mean, obviously it shouldn't be the promo shots or whatever, but
yeah. Oh,
he has this look of anger on his face, like all the time.
So the promo shots, he's smiling and all American and like, look at me, I'm a cute ex-Marine with my dog tags. And then there's these screenshots where they're screenshots of the TV show, and he's staring at the camera. And I'm like, this guy is a serial killer.
I know. He literally
has the potential to be a serial killer.
I want to like hide whenever he looks at the camera. I was like, oh my God, he's making this horrible, angry look at me. You know, I don't want to. And it's so good because the thing that the house guests will do is, and they all want him out. They all want him out. But the thing that the house guests will do is they will do stuff to provoke him. Like one of the more ignorant folks in the house has gotten in this habit of like banging pots and pans and singing the circus song, da 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 da, and banging these pots. It is the stupidest thing. But they
piss him off.
Yeah, to piss him off. And I'm like, dude, I would not do anything to piss this guy off. I mean, I know you want to get under his skin, but I don't think you want the season of Big Brother ending with like blood splatters all over the walls, because this guy, maybe he's not, but the looks on his face.
Oh no, he has problems.
Are horrible.
Yeah.
You know? And
I'm looking at pictures of him with the girl with the long brown hair. This is the girl that he's hooked up with. Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't see your video, but yeah, I'm assuming I can't see. We're not sharing video, so I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. So I'm looking at some of the still shots snagged from some of the episodes where he's making terrible faces. And then there's some where he just has a normal face, but she's sitting next to him. Here's the weird thing I'm noticing, and this is just something I'm noticing as a girl, so, and I might be reading more into it. There's a little bit of space every time she's sitting next to him. There, and she's leaning ever so it's like she'll be holding his hand, but she's leaning just ever so slightly away from him. And there's one scene where he looks like he's yelling at someone else. He's wearing a green baseball cap, like a camo baseball cap. And it looks like he's yelling at someone else, and she's sitting next to him, and she's literally just, she has that look on her face. Her eyes are downcast, and she just has this look on her face like, just don't draw attention to yourself. Just don't draw attention to yourself.
Oh, well, yeah. They've gotten in a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, they gotten in a couple of really good, big arguments, she and him, because she was telling him, look, you're ruining my game, you know, well, because he kept going off on people.
Photos is a little off, but
anyway, so that I just wanted to bring that up because so I didn't spoil it for anyone. Nobody knows who goes home this week. I didn't say anything, but even though I watched it right before we started recording, but
okay.
And I'm not going to ruin it for anyone. The only other thing I have was this stupid. So we went to a concert on Monday.
Ooh, who played?
It was Matchbox 20.
Oh, fantastic.
And Counting Crows. And the funniest thing was, so I had these interns for the past like 2 months, and they're both, you know, still in college, 19 years old, 20 years old, whatever. And by the way, Nicole of Nowhere joined the chat room. So hi, Nicole.
I didn't want to cut you off, but I wanted to go, hi, Nick.
And so I have these interns, and so I'm like, and they are so millennial and so young, but that has nothing to do with concert, but they were asking.
Cute. Okay.
They were asking me, they were like, what are you doing? Gabriella, which is one of them. She's like, oh, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, oh, I'm going to a Matchbox 20 concert. And she says, oh, who's that? You know, because
stab me in the heart. And, I'm old.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so old because I know her. And I was never like a huge, I mean, I like their music, but I mean, I was never a huge fan, but I mean, they're a big band. So we're like, yeah, we're going to go to this. It was nearby. It was at our local amphitheater thing. But anyway, but this is how much I didn't know. So, well, first of all, I just have to tell this. So we get there and there's a line. This is an outdoor amphitheater thing. And part of it's covered. The seated area has a big tent looking thing over it. And then there's a grass area that you can buy tickets to like sit in the grass. And this was a very popular ticket. And so when we bought our tickets, the seating was already gone. So we had to sit in the grass. But anyway, we get there and we park, I don't know, not a mile, but we park pretty far away. And the line was like, because they hadn't opened the doors yet. So the line was, I don't know, I can't, a long line, just like a really long line. And so we're walking along and I had taken my iPad because I wasn't sure if I was super excited about this concert. So I'm like, I want to have iPad and phone in case my phone runs out of battery. So I have something to do.
Right.
In case I'm not having fun. And so we were in line for, I want to say, an hour.
Oh, wow.
Because it was about 20 minutes before they opened the door. And then we were walking in the line for another like 30, 40 minutes to get up to the gate to get in. Because, you know, everybody has to go through the metal detectors and do all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so we do all this. And first of all, people are cutting in line. People are like trying to sneak in line. This guy in front of me was like loudly going, well, it must be nice to just get here, you know, 10 minutes before the concert and just cut in line in front of everybody. And I was like, he's like, we should just drag all you folks out. And I was like, I'm going to help you drag these people out. Anyway, so we're in line like an hour at this point. We finally get up to the gate and they go through my bag and she says, I'm sorry, sir, you can't take an iPad in.
Why not?
And I, you know, I don't want to cause a scene, but I was like, well, okay, but here's the deal about it. I didn't look online and I should have looked online to make sure, but they have signs like this line. All the way down the line, they have all these signs telling you what you cannot bring into the state, into the amphitheater.
Why can't they bring an iPad in?
I don't know. They have no guns, no cameras with detachable lenses, no food or drink from outside, no whatever. There was no mention of computers, laptops, tablets, anything. No mention of that on there. I'm like, but all of your signs don't say anything about tablets or
my work email while I'm at a concert.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what I use my iPad for when I'm out and about.
And you know, I mean, I had been in line for like an hour at this point.
Oh God.
So, but there was nothing I could do. So I'm like, okay, fine. So Mark gave me the key. I let him go ahead and go in because his friends had gone in and they were saving seats like in the grassy area because it was going to be a really full concert. So I walk back to the car, which is at least, I want to say at least a half a mile, maybe a mile away.
I would have been so pissed.
Walk all the way back and put the iPad up. Well, I was really pissed off because I wasn't sure, you know, I mean, I'm okay with, I don't like big crowds. I'm not a big crowd person, but I want us to do stuff that's fun. So I'm like, yeah, right. I want to go to a concert, you know, whatever. But it's not like it wasn't Mariah Carey. It was just someone I'd heard on the radio, you know, so it wasn't like I've been looking forward to this. And so I'm like walking back to the car. I'm thinking, oh, you know, here I've been out in the hot sun for an hour waiting in this line. I can't even take my freaking iPad in. And then I'm, you know, well, as I'm walking, the line is longer now than it was when we had first gotten there.
And now you're going to look like the guy cutting in line. Well,
I wasn't going to do that. I'm like, I'm not. I mean, first of all, I don't want some redneck to beat me up because he thinks I'm cutting in line, and I don't want to look rude to people. So I sat in the car for like 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go, and even after 20 minutes, I still had probably another 20 minutes in line to get back in.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. This is the worst. So, oh, my God. I would be like literally like, fuck this concert. I'm going home. So. Well, have managed to deal with way more than I would have. So, points to you for being a rational human being, because I would not have been.
And so I get in and everything and get settled on our blankets and everything and all that. And the just a couple of things about the concert. First of all, Counting Crows came out. And I knew nothing about Counting Crows, and I didn't know what any of the singers for Matchbox 20 looked like. Like I've heard them on the radio, but I had no idea what they look like. I mean, I knew Matchbox 20, and I know a lot of their songs just because they played on the radio a lot. So about 40 minutes into Counting Crows, I looked at some Facebook post that Mark had made, and it said, oh, Adam and I are at a concert, Counting Crows with Matchbox 20. And I was like, oh, there's more than I thought. This was Matchbox 20. I was like, oh, I didn't realize this was Counting Crows.
You weren't even recognizing the songs. Like, you were like, I don't even know most of this. Like, you probably recognized one or two songs from the radio.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I was like, I guess they're just playing a bunch of stuff that I've never heard before. And this was like, and it was a Monday night, and I was kind of being old man. That's another reason I was kind of irritated, because I was kind of thinking, oh, I've got work tomorrow. And anyway, so this band, Counting Crows, goes on for like an hour. Well, the concert started, they had a band even before Counting Crows. I didn't even hear that band because I was still in line.
Right.
And then when I get in, you know, Counting Crows comes out, whatever, they're on for like an hour. Well, Matchbox 20 didn't start until, I want to say, 9:45.
No, I'm already ready to go home and go to bed. Like, I'm sorry. It's a school night. I'm going to bed. I have to be in bed by 10 o'clock because my alarm clock goes off at 5:30. Oh, my God. Adam.
Well, you know, and so I'm thinking, oh, they better be really good, you know, whatever, because. But actually, they were fantastic. They were really good. The lead singer was great. What's his name? Now I can't remember his name. But apparently he had a.
I will do that for you. I will man the Google while you talk.
Apparently he had a little bit of a solo career, but anyway, they are all. I would say the entire band, or at least three of them, are still very attractive, and so he was nice to look at. Very good voice, and I recognized their songs, so I was like, okay, good, you know, this is good. But
the lead singer is Rob Thomas.
Yes, him. Thank you.
Yes.
But I thought the guitar, I'm not going to remember his name, but there was a guitarist who I thought was actually, I found more attractive than Rob Thomas.
The short one with glasses and the kind of shaggy brown hair, or
no,
is he
the taller one?
Or is he the taller, dark-haired one with the beard?
No beard. But I mean, that might be an old photo that you're looking at, because nobody.
I'm looking at their Wikipedia. Give me a second, and I'll see if I who the guitarist is, bass or lead guitar.
It's the tall blonde.
Okay.
In any of the photos,
it's the tall blonde. Yeah.
Yeah. But he has like white hair now, but it didn't even matter. I don't know. For some reason, I found him. But we were on the lawn. I was seeing him on a TV screen, so I don't know. But I just found him. But Rob Thomas is really attractive as well. I don't know.
So the guitarist's name is David Kyle Cook.
Kyle, yeah. I think he went by Kyle. Yeah. But anyway.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So that was my experience there. The only other thing I'll say is, for some reason, we're in the grass. And for some reason, every damn person who was trying to get to their seat. You know, they went to the concession stand and bought five more beers, and they wanted to get back to their seats, had to walk right in front of us. I mean, the whole night we were like the aisle. I don't know why. It was crazy, but I made it through it.
Well, and it sounds like you had a good time, and they did a good job. The bands did a good job, so that's great. I thought the end of the story was going to be, and I'm about, you know, 20 minutes in to Counting Crows, and I look over, and the person next to me has their iPad out.
No, I didn't.
Like, burn it to the ground.
That would have, I would have been. Well, the only other tragic thing about the evening was we hadn't had dinner. So,
top of it.
Because we had to get there early. We had to leave work, go home, grab, you know, whatever we needed, our blankets and all that, and go straight to the concert. So we didn't have time to eat. And I've been dieting, so I didn't want to eat concession stand food. So we didn't eat until like 11:30 after we got home. So,
gosh.
But it was, they were good. Now, I could have skipped Counting Crows, to be honest, but, Matchbox 20 was good. No, they were really good. So I enjoyed that part of the show, but it was a little bit late. It was a little bit late for me.
So we're going, when you were describing the amphitheater where you saw the concert, we're going to a concert at the end of this month at the Greek Theater, which is an outdoor amphitheater in Berkeley. And it has the same thing. It has like bench seating, but then it also has the grass. And we, being the old farts that we are, I will not fight young people for grass seating. So I pay the higher price to have the assigned bench seating where you have a seat number and everything. Uh-huh. But for our anniversary, we're going to go see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers 40th anniversary tour. So
I told
bogey music, like,
I told Mark, well, you know, we kind of ranged the gamut on different things, because like in December, we're going to see Lady Gaga.
Nice.
Followed by 2 weekends later, Finding Neverland. So, I mean, you know, we're trying to be eclectic in the concerts that we go see. But
a couple weeks ago, I went with Scott the Satyr, and we saw Hamilton. So it was fantastic. So I get exactly what you and, you know, the boyfie are doing, because Bob and I are trying to do the same thing. We're trying to do experiences now rather than stuff for when we do gifts. So for like our anniversaries and our birthdays, it's usually tickets to a concert or tickets to a comedy show or tickets to some sort of theatrical event. This way we can have an experience rather than collecting more stuff.
Yeah, I actually like that better, because there's never, if there's something that I truly want, usually it's mega expensive if I haven't already bought it for myself, which I don't want him spending that kind of money on me. And if it's not mega expensive, I've already bought it for myself.
That's so exactly how it is in our family too. So yeah, same
so
thing.
So I'm like, you know, let's just, and we both love to travel. We both love going to concerts. We both love eating really nice meals. We, you know, stuff like that. So we definitely want experiences instead of other. I had it muted for a moment.
I keep wanting to go the news.
Just imagine what that would have sounded like had the beginning of that song played. Because I had it muted. All right. So Florida, a Florida couple who had been bothered by noises in the attic for years, were horrified to discover that they were sharing their home not with rats, but a gigantic snake.
Oh my God, what?
Bob and Linda Vanderherchen took it. That reminds me of all the names Rose Nyland on Golden Girls would say. You know, I don't know if you ever watched that. But anyway, they took a peek in their attic on July 20th, hoping to silence the bumps and scrapes that had been bothering them for years. What they found was a scaly squatter, and it says, and they've got a picture of this, and it's a big, I'm going to say, they probably say in the article actually, but I'm going to guess 7 or 8 foot boa constrictor.
Oh, that's big. That's really big.
Yeah. So they show this picture of it, and they called animal control, and animal control said why didn't animal control just come out? So basically they said they called animal control, and animal control told them to run the dryer so the snake will be drawn to the heat to get it out of the attic. And
because you want a snake popping out of your dryer instead of your attic? Like, What?
I don't. Why didn't they just come out? So then they say the following day, the officer showed up and didn't feel comfortable, and said they should try to kill it. And so the officer didn't want to do any. The officer was like, "Okay, you guys turn on your dryer and get this thing to come. Okay, why don't you guys just kill this?" The officer wasn't doing any of this. They were like telling them that they should do it. They said it took.
Sorry, animal control officer. That's your job. That I'm. Oh, geez. Okay.
So it says footage filmed by Bob. I guess this is the homeowner using a phone on a selfie stick does not indeed show the scaly beast slowly slithering through insulation in the attic, or does indeed show that. And they have all these videos on here. Eventually, on the 24th, they managed to call out handler Mark Lampert to shift the snake, but it didn't leave easily. It's Shark Week on Discovery and Snake Week at my house, joked Linda. We have a handler that has been here since 5 trying to get it. So eventually they got it out, though. I mean, but it is this huge. They don't mention exactly how big it is, but it looks like it's 7 or 8 feet.
I like that they finally got a hold of like a wildlife or a reptile handler to come out and take it, which means the snake's going to be like not going to just be killed. Like they humanely had it removed, and it's probably going to get released into a swamp or, you know, put in some sort of facility or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's huge. But what I want to know is they must never go up in their attic. Like, I mean, they have, oh gosh, why do these stupid sites have autoplay videos on?
I hate autoplay videos. I'm with you. Yeah.
But no, I don't know. How do you go years hearing stuff bumping around in your attic and not like go figure out what it is?
How did that snake go years living in their attic and never once make an appearance somewhere else in the house is what I want to know.
Maybe they had mice or rats and it was living off of those.
I'm only glad they didn't have a pet cat, because what do you want to bet if they had a pet cat and it went missing one day? Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to have nightmares about that now.
Well, a talented dog in China was filmed doing a tightrope walk across the clotheslines in its owner's garden. The well-balanced canine was filmed this month in someplace I can't say, in the Hunan province, stepping carefully with its paws atop the clotheslines. The agile dog takes several steps across the lines without falling or even wavering. The dog's owner said it only took the canine about a month of practicing to master the trick. And then they have a video. And this dog is like up in the air. I would say he's 8 or 10 feet up in the air, it looks like, from this video. On this... The only reason I really read this article, well, first of all, it's kind of amazing looking, but this is an audio podcast, so I'm not really sure why I chose this, except my dog, Sydney. So and no, she's not tightrope walking, but we have this fence. You know, we have a tiny little yard at the front of our condo, and it's got grass and a maple tree and all this stuff, and it's got a trella or whatever it's called, a pergola, the wood.
Like the little wooden overhang you can hang like the little twinkle lights. Yeah, it's a pergola.
So we have a pergola and all that, but anyway, so it's enough area for her to go to the bathroom, and she likes to go out and lay in the sun and stuff like that. And but the fence that they chose to fence these in has a space between each metal little pole thing. Uh-huh. And when we first moved in, we thought, oh, she'll get through those. So we put this, we had a doggy, it's not a cage, but like it's a metal fence thing that you can use indoors or outdoors to like keep them wherever you want them to be. It's about 4 feet, 3 or 4 feet tall, and it's wire. And anyway,
yeah.
So we had put that up against the gate, but it's annoying because if you need to go out the gate, you have to move this big thing and everything.
Right.
So recently I thought, you know, she's too fat now. I'm like, she can't get through those. And yeah. I told Mark, I'm like, and Mark said, he's like, I don't think you should get rid of that. I think she'll get out. And I'm like, no. She's not going to get out. There is no way she can get through those things.
Right.
And so about 2 weeks ago, I removed this extra wire thing. This morning, I'm about to leave to go to work, and Mark had already left for work. And I call Sydney because I wanted to say bye to, well, you know, I always say bye to her before I leave.
Of course.
I was like, oh, she must be outside laying in the sun or whatever. And she doesn't come. I call her louder. She doesn't come. So I go to the front. And I, because I leave, it's weird. I leave out the back because the garage is in the back. And anyway, so I go to the front. I look out the window to see where she is. And there I see her standing on the other side of the fence trying to get back in.
Oh, dear.
And the fence was
trying to come home before she gets caught that she got through the fence. She basically got caught that she snuck out.
So I'm like, go get her immediately and everything. And so after we got home this evening, I was like, I don't know how she did that. I'm like, there is no way she can get through those. And he's like, let's just test it out. So he's like, let's both get on the other side of the fence and let's call her. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, she just went right through those slats like it was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, she's got a lot of hair. So he's like, she's all poof. She just looks fatter because she's just got this poofy hair.
I'm not fat. I'm fluffy. Yes.
Exactly. So I immediately put the thing back. But yeah, what I don't know is, for the past 2 weeks, has she just been traipsing around the condo complex or whatever, just chatting with people and stuff, you know?
I'm gonna think it's a pretty good bet. Yeah.
So I'm glad that, like, you know, she didn't just run away or get lost and not, you know, be able to find her way back or whatever. That dog, I'm telling you, this dog has gotten out or gotten away or gotten, you know, lost more times than any other dog I've owned in my entire life. When we lived in the house, the lawnmower people let her out one time. And she, like, made it all the way, like, two blocks away to these people's house. We found her. They had, like, they were going to take her. I mean, they didn't know who she belonged to. So they had a little girl who loved her. And they were like, oh, we took her to the park. And we fed her treats. And
thank you for taking care of her dog. Her back. Bye.
I had had her chipped when she was a puppy. And then one day at work, I get a call from the chip company saying, someone has found your dog. So we go to the vet where they had dropped her off, pick her up from there, you know, and then we move into this place about 2 months ago. The lawn people here let her out. My neighbor found her almost at the road. And now I'm just stupid and think she can't get through the slats. And she's just probably been going in and out like whatever she wants. So that dog has gotten out so many times.
I know. She's gone on adventure. Adam, you don't understand. She needs a life of adventure.
I guess so. Or she hates us. You know, I mean, I don't know. She's like, I've got to get away from this house. I can't stand it anymore.
No, she doesn't hate you because she comes back.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Today was the day that she finally figured it out. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Maybe today she remembered which house was hers.
Yeah. I don't know. All right. Well, let's do some birthdays.
Let's all sing happy birthday in English and Spanish. Ready?
It's that time of the show where I will play some musical clues and Christina will have to tell me or guess whose birthday it is.
I am terrible at this. Okay.
Oh, you.
I tried to play along with your other episodes. I'm terrible.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, because we've got about six birthdays. So a couple of them, I don't know. We'll just see how you do. I'm not going to guess at all. I'm just going to play everything and see how you do. So here is the first clue.
Okay.
In the unlikely event of the aircraft having to make an emergency landing, you will be told to adopt this protective brace position. If facing rearwards in Club World.
Okay. Are you hearing that?
I'm hearing a lady giving airline instructions.
Okay. I have another clue, but I didn't have a whole lot of musical clues. So just, unless you know who that is, which I'd be amazed if you did.
No. Okay. I was like, is this an ad? What? Okay.
All right. So here's our next clue.
Okay, so
what is this song?
Oh, the song.
I mean, what is this a theme to?
It's the theme song to the X-Files.
Okay, good.
So I would guess it'd be Gillian Anderson?
I'll you know what? You didn't say her name right. But I'll give that to you. It's Gillian Anderson. Yes.
Okay.
Gillian Anderson is 49 years old. Yeah, she's been in some other TV shows, but nothing with iconic themes that you would.
She had a British accent.
Yeah, that's the only thing. So, all right. If you just said Dave, well, if you just said the guy, I'd be like, okay, come on. It was a girl in the first.
And that was the funny thing is I almost said David Duchovny. And then I went, no, wait, it was a woman's voice in the first
woman. All right. Here's our next one. It'll play in a second. I got it.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm not hearing it. Perfect
partner. Okay. I'm going to hold on. I'm
Star barbecue sauce. The
that
perfect
is,
partner for your chicken.
Oh,
that was great. Can you do one more?
I know his name. Oh,
Lone
Sam.
Star barbecue sauce.
Yeah. Not
Have you ever heard of the West
playwright? It's Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott.
It is Sam Elliott. Wow, I didn't even have to play the other clip. He was a hard one cuz he's only pretty much been in movies.
I love him so much though.
And well, he has such a nice voice, yeah. All right, here he's 73 years old. All right, here is our next birthday. I don't know if you're going to get this one or not, but we'll see. We will see.
Yeah, I will try.
Show me an open door. You go and slam it on me. I can't take any more. I'm saying, baby, please have mercy on me. Take it easy
any
on my
ideas?
Even though you told me to hurt me.
I heard this song. It's,
And I have one more clue, but it's going to sound the same. I mean,
okay,
he's a singer, but I do. Here is one more.
Got a feeling that I'm going under, but I know that I'll make it out alive. If I quit calling you my lover, move on. You watch me beat it till I can't breathe.
Jonas Brother?
It's not a Jonas Brother, but they do all sound kind of alike.
Okay.
I believe he's Canadian.
I've heard both these songs. I have no idea who the singer is.
All right, that's fine. His name is
Boy Singers.
Yeah. He's very cute. His name is Shawn Mendes.
Okay.
So does that name even mean anything to you?
No, I have no idea. I recognize the songs. I've heard them play on the radio. I literally have no idea who Shawn Mendes is. Yeah. I'm assuming he's some cute Disney-fied looking young, like 21-year-old.
He is a very twinky looking. Yeah, but he's hot.
Probably has brown hair.
He does have brown hair. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, he's 19 years old. And here is the next birthday.
We're X-Files?
Yeah. So I have one more, although I have one more song. So I'll just go ahead and play this.
Do they share a birthday? I don't think they share a birthday. Maybe.
I don't know if you ever watched the show. I didn't, so.
Tell me the theme song to Californication.
That is the theme song to Californication.
David Duchovny. I didn't know they shared a birthday.
It is David Duchovny. Well, they don't share a birthday, but they both have birthdays in August. His birthday is actually August 7th, and hers is August 9th. Anyway, David Duchovny is 57 years old. And we have two more birthdays. So and this one is going to be very hard. And anyway, it's an ensemble cast, and I didn't have another song, so we'll just.
Here's a story of a lovely lady who was bringing us three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold.
I'm assuming you know what this is.
Oh, this is the Disney show of my childhood. Yes, the Brady Bunch.
So I don't have another song, and this is an ensemble cast, but here's what I will say.
Uh-huh.
I believe this person also was in Grease at one point and has also been on Dancing with the Stars.
Then it would be the mom of the Brady Bunch, Florence Henderson.
It is not Florence Henderson, but she could have been in both of those. I don't know.
I remember her from Grease. That was the one that stumped me. because she's been on Dancing with the Stars, I'm pretty sure.
We'll give you one more guess and then I'll just tell you because
I had the older Brady's son. I don't know the actors' names.
It's not. So, okay. It's Maureen McCormick, who played Marcia.
Really?
Yeah. And I could be, I was Googling and I could have sworn I saw that she was in Grease at some point, but I could be wrong. It could have been Florence Henderson that they were talking about, but I thought it was her. But I didn't have any other musical cues to play for her. So
glad that I did not know that because I loved the Brady Bunch growing up. But okay.
But there were like 15 of them or something. So,
a lot of them, yeah.
All right. Here is our last birthday. Okay.
Adam,
do you know what this is?
So help me, Lord Hydrogen, if you are going to try to get me celebrate the birthday of the angry tangerine.
So you know what this song is?
I know that it is the presidential march. Yes.
Okay. All right. I have one more clip. So just hold on. I have one more clip here.
My parents shared not only an improbable love. They shared an abiding faith in the
possibilities
of this. Yay! Place. I stand.
Yeah, it is. It was.
Long ago, I remember seeing it all over Twitter.
Yeah, Barack Obama is 56 years old, and he was the president. Well, I mean, I guess they're still called president, but I don't know exactly what the correct term. Former President Barack Obama.
That's actually correct. Former president. And he would be referred to as Mr. President if we were to meet him. But yes.
So Tommy in San Francisco, which I assume is Tom in Chicago, but he must be in San Francisco at the moment. he thought it was Sting. He thought Shawn Mendes was Sting for a moment.
I would have guessed, if you played Sting music, I would have guessed because I know Sting's solo work. But
So those are our birthdays, and I don't have an ending thing because normally what Daniel would do is he would just pause it and then play the rest of the song, and I didn't do that, so I'm not going to start it over at the beginning. So just pretend that the birthday song ended. But in the meantime, without a bumper, we will just say happy birthday to Pride 48, folks, the Queer Caucus, Toppy Smelly, who had a birthday on August 6th, Brian, who had a birthday on August 10th, Dr. Stone, who had a birthday on the 9th, Big Fatty, whose birthday is today, as we are recording this, and then Love Joe has a birthday on August 14th. So happy birthday to all of the Pride 48 folks who had a birthday last week or this week. And
happy
that
birthday,
is
everyone. Happy birthday.
Yeah. And we do not have any contact this week. So I'm just going to say thank you for joining me. It was a lot of fun, even though I couldn't see you the whole time.
I'm so sorry. Thank you for the invitation. I promise next time my bandwidth will be better.
Well, who knows whose bandwidth it was. At least we had good audio from you for the entire time. So I was just like, okay, I can live without, you know, I can live without
not
video.
Being able to see.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm sorry that I took over the first portion of the show with my sad Christina story. It was actually meant to be kind of a kooky story, not a sad story, but I'm sure we're going to get feedback on it. I'm sure we're going to get feedback.
First of all, there's no need to apologize because I wanted you to talk because I invited you on the show. So that was perfectly fine. Second of all, I did at one point feel like, you know, I really should be Nicole because I think Nicole would have such wonderful things to say here, you know, such prescient or meaningful, you know, wonderful things to say. And I'm, you know, I don't have anything meaningful to say, but it was great.
Fine.
So
what's funny is I haven't even had a chance to fill Nicole in on everything that's happening. And she popped into the chat room after we had already talked about it. So when she listens to this episode, I'm going to get a text message of, oh, honey. And then she's going to give me her lovely and wonderful advice.
Well, we've been using the new stream again tonight because I'm really at the end of August, we're going to be switching over. So so just like Turnip Head, you've also been helping me in testing the stream.
Thank you.
One of these days I'm going to know how to end this, but Dubious Intent was written, recorded, and performed under Creative Commons. You can give me a call on the voicemail line, which is 229-234-758. Why can I never remember that? Nobody can remember the phone number. 229-234-7587, which would be lovely because I wouldn't mind having contact. You can email me, which is just, I'm just going to consolidate everything to adamburns.uk@gmail.com. And why don't you go over to pride48.com and find a bunch of other LGBT and LGBT-friendly shows to listen to other than this one. That would be great. And Christina, thank you once again for joining me tonight.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I was happy to do it.
Well, you know, and next time you're on the show, maybe you'll have a nephew that is drug-free and has all his money intact, and everything will be wonderful.
Lovely.
Good night.
Good night.
This show is part of the Pride 48 Network. Find more shows over at pride48.com.